Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of May, Anno Domini 2019. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. First, we should mention Dave Enright, one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Southwest. Heading for the Badlands and the Mesas. Michael Oden here to keep us on the straight and narrow. God love him. He'll be here for the next, I think, Hail Oden. He'll be here for the next several hours. Hopefully most of the jokes he hears won't be quite that bad. I mean, that's fine.
I do that when I order salad at the restaurant, too.
Hail Caesar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't go to many restaurants twice, do you?
No.
Google's yearly developer conference, Google I.O., has started. Actually, it's ended now. And they've unveiled their latest hardware and software in a new direction. We're moving from a company that helps you find answers to a company that helps you get things done, said Sundar Pichai, Google's CEO. Google is making a much more affordable version of its flagship phone, the Pixel 3a and 3a XL. The new phones are about half the price of the premium versions. The 5.6-inch Pixel 3a will cost $400, while the 6-inch Pixel 3a XL will cost $480. The regular high-end Pixel devices start at $800. Both of those prices, by the way, include 4 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of storage. Google's Nest Hub and Hub Max smart screen devices are getting a camera. That means you can now use Google Duo for video chatting. Of course, for those of you who get a tad creeped out by having a camera working in your home, that may not be a plus. They say it's secure. New additions to Google's voice assistant include personalization features using, of course, information from your contacts, calendar, and places you regularly visit online. It will also run much faster on phones, according to Google, allowing you to whip through tasks using your voice as fast as you could with your fingers. There are also new eligibility features, including a live caption tool that lets you turn on captions for videos, both web and home, and podcasts on Android smartphones. The Android is getting a dark mode. People seem really excited by a dark mode. And Android Q, the next version, will get it, which is actually nicer for battery life. The timing on this one may not have been great, given the debacle with the Samsung Fold. But Google says they're really excited about foldables. And here's a little factoid. Google says it has 2.5 billion, with a B, active Android devices around the world. Well, there's still no poll. But there is a link in the forum to talk about this stuff. And I'd love to know what, if anything, excited you from Google I.O. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're coming out with, in essence, a phone that's half the price but still has almost all of the features.
And it really does have almost all of it. It's got a slightly slower processor, which, trust me, most people will never notice. It's got it only has a 64 gig option, not a 128 gig option.
But since they give you virtually unlimited free cloud storage for your photos, that's what takes up all the space.
Right. That's what takes up all the space. So you can erase photos from your phone, and they're still on the cloud. And, of course, you can still get to them using the Google Photos app. So I don't know what you're missing, except, you know, you're saving $400 or more. So it's an amazing thing they're doing. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you can only sell so many high-end premium flagship phones. Apple is finding that out. They're not selling as many Apple 10s as they used to, iPhone 10s as they used to. And their market has slowed down, whereas the market for mid-level phones like the XR, 10, excuse me, 10R,
yeah,
and the hopefully the Pixel 3A, Google hopes, are still fairly strong.
And Apple is even still selling the 8s and the 7s if you don't need the super latest whiz-bang features at a much lower price.
But what's interesting is you get most of the whiz-bang super features in the Pixel 3A.
Yep.
I mean, that night sight camera alone, how many of you take pictures indoors or of an evening when you're out or whatever you're doing? The night sight camera is astonishing in its clarity and how well it takes low light pictures. It's pretty amazing. For $400, I don't know how you can go wrong. Now, a lot of people, of course, don't care how much it costs, or they're paying $50 a month on their phone bill or whatever that is. But wouldn't you rather pay $20 a month on your phone bill?
Right.
Wouldn't you rather have that $30 in your pocket and still get the same quality that you had before? Now, it doesn't. Here's the difference. It doesn't. It has a plastic back instead of a glass back.
Oh,
I actually find that to be a plus.
Because the glass won't break.
Right. The plastic is less likely to shatter than the glass will if you drop
it. Yeah.
And it's less slippery, so you are less likely to drop it. It does have a fairly big forehead and chin, the bezels at the top and the bottom. But so what? So what? If your identity is so wrapped up in how sexy your phone looks, you need to reevaluate.
There's been some leaked pictures of the iPhone 11 with a big square bump on the back for the multi-camera array. And a lot of people are saying, well, that's ugly. I don't want that big bump on the back of it.
Yep. And again, there's only one camera on the back and one camera on the front for $400.
Oh, the humanity.
Exactly. Anyway, I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed by it. Before we get to the phones, I also have to admit that this news item was a little bit of a cheat. As some of you may know, I'm embarking on a new venture. Ask Nick has changed a little bit. It's if you go to AskNick.com, you will see that I am offering a membership, and with the membership, you get the app, the phone app for both Android and iPhone. And one of the posts that I put up in the app was essentially all of this same information, so you can easily see what's going on. And it was a little bit of a cheat. I admit I used essentially all the same. I mean, it's all the same information, no matter where you're putting it. It's they only did so much at Google I/O, and it's all essentially the same information. That's the kind of stuff that's on the app. But we should probably go to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I decided to call early and often.
There you go.
I took the plunge last week and installed Ubuntu.
Yeah.
On a separate drive, a Seagate 1 terabyte backup drive, and followed the instructions, everything. So I've got a dual boot system. So I'm really having fun with it right now. I have Ubuntu 18.04.2 LTS installed, and it's GNOME or GNOME, whichever way you pronounce it, 3.28.2. So I got a couple of questions I wanted to ask. The first one is that Seagate Ultra Slim backup drive robust enough to be run on a daily basis?
Yes.
I've been running this thing now all day long, you know, playing with the terminal and loading other stuff.
As long as you've got it
ventilated. Right. One of the things about the 2.5-inch external drives is there's no fan in them. We like them because they're cheaper than the 3.5-inch drives and physically smaller. But generally, for our customers in the video or creative or modeling work, if they want an external drive, it's a big 3.5-inch drive with at least one, maybe two fans, because they're going to be using it all day long. But the smaller ones are fine as long as you keep it well ventilated. We sometimes joke at the end of the show here, my USB-C dongle that I have all my cameras running through gets really, really hot.
It really does. I
want to know what processor's in there.
Right.
to do all that processing. But keeping it cool is probably the biggest thing.
Okay, I think ventilation is reasonable, but right now I have two honking heat sinks on the bottom and the top. Now I realize the plastic's not the best conductor, but I've got it sandwiched between those two, mm-hmm. and they even get a little warm. So I was wondering whether or not I need to buy something. So I'll take that into account. Now the next thing is, what's the difference between going, let's say, from 18.04.02 LTS to 19.04, which in fact I guess loses its support in January or something like that?
Yeah, that's the big thing. There are two branches for almost every Linux distribution. One is the LTS, which stands for long-term support, and the other one, well, is not. So what happened, both of them get updated, both of them get both of them get updated. The 19.04 is the cutting edge stuff. So the non-long-term support branch, some of the stuff is a little newer, it's like with anything, they've done an extensive amount of testing on it, but nobody's going to promise it. It isn't going to have a little bit of an issue somewhere along the line.
Okay, that's not for me.
Right. And so you're a cutting edge person, and with all that implies, or you're the long term support person, with all the security that implies. But you may once in a while not get a brand new feature first.
Yeah, I can live with that as long as it doesn't do something wacky that I'm still learning. I don't want it to go off into outer space.
Right.
And I can't figure out what in the world happened.
Oh, I want to run the Bionic Beaver.
That's 1804.
That's 1804.
Bionic Beaver.
Right.
Yeah. They all the Ubuntu releases all have animal names.
So I've discovered.
Xenial Zenus and Trusty Tar and Disco Dingo and Cosmic Cuttlefish.
Cuttlefish. Yeah. That's
so. Yeah, that's and the latest one is Bionic Beaver, and I forget what 1904 is. Something starts with a C.
Disco something or something. I have no. I've been unsure about Disco it, but Dingo. I think I'll shy away. Yeah. But the last one is I looked at this thing the other day when I pulled up the thing with the screwdriver and the wrench.
Yeah.
And I went to the About section, and it shows that the basic system had already been updated from 1804 to 1804.2.
Yeah.
Then it had another message saying, check your updates, and I did. And it said you're eligible for GNOME 3.32.
Sure.
And I have 3.28. So I did it. I hit the update button. It ran for 10 minutes or so, and it told me it was done. However, when I come back now to About, it still shows that I'm only running GNOME whatever, 3.28.2. So I'm wondering, did it actually work or what?
Yes, it has updated, but you have to reboot. There are a few things, and a very few things, that you must reboot to get the newest version of. One is the base operating system, and one is the graphical user interface you're actually using. So it can't start using the new one until you're not doing anything.
So a reboot means literally turn the machine off and then turn it back on, or a simple restart?
A restart would be fine.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I did manage to load, what is this thing called? Let me look at it right quick. It's got a handle on it. Oh, not Tweaks. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And in Tweaks, I was able to change the file thing to a little file cabinet and stuff like that. But I just wasn't sure about the update to 3.32 because it doesn't look like it's done anything, even though it says it's successfully installed.
Well, in addition, you won't see major differences. 3.32 is any point upgrades are not going to be massively different to begin with, but definitely a reboot should give you the new thing. And GNOME is an excellent user interface, GUI, And I think you'll find you'll be enjoying it for a long time.
Okay, well, I'm actually enjoying the terminal again. It puts me back in the old DOS days.
Well, yeah. And there's a terminal in your Mac, too, that you can open up, and I've learned a few of the bash commands. And
Steve, that drove me crazy. The other day, I couldn't help myself. I actually got in onto the terminal on the Mac and made three directories just for the heck of it.
Yeah.
There you go.
So
there's all the Emacs games hidden in there, too.
Right.
Emacs games?
Yeah, the Emacs editor, and I'm not going to get into the religious debate of VI versus Emacs, but... In Emacs, there are actually
some... I always use Pico.
I use Nano, so there's another religious debate. But inside Emacs, there are a bunch of actual games.
Okay.
I'll post a link to find them.
Okay, great. I'm trying to write all this as we talk. Emacs games. I'll wait for your link, and then I'll go there. This is actually taking me back to my ancient days of DOS, when it was a badge of honor to be able to work inside that from the command line.
Yep.
And what was interesting is before that, when everyone had to use DOS, I was one of the first people in college to learn the graphical editing. And they were also amazed at me. And it got me so mad when someone sat down at the graphic terminal and opened a text window.
But you had a fix for that.
I unplugged the keyboard, so they thought it was broken and would move over to a dumb terminal.
All right, thanks, Larry.
Thank you so much, guys.
Have fun. Bye-bye. Yeah, I spend a lot of time in the terminal at the command line in Linux, because there's so much you can do so fast. And particularly when I'm working on remote systems, I can do all kinds of things from the command line that are either difficult or, in fact, relatively impossible to do at the GUI. And so I'm very pleased with that. So there's a bunch of things in every version of the terminal, of every operating system for users. And I've got a next news item. I'll read about the Linux kernel in Windows, which is quite astonishing to me. But yeah, you can play a bunch of games in Emacs. Emacs is an editor, and learning Emacs is a lifelong thing, but playing the games in it is fairly easy. So.
Tetris, Pong, Snake.
Yeah, all the old
games. All the old games. Solitaire.
Wow. Okay, let's talk to Will. Is calling all the way from Newport News, Virginia. Hiya, Will. What's up?
Hey, fellas. Nick, Dave. Hey, unlike your last caller, I do not have an external hard drive. Let me tell you about my setup. I have a Toshiba Satellite C55 1 megahertz processor with 4 gigs of RAM, Windows 8.1 on it. And recently I have been looking at getting a Linux distro, specifically Ubuntu. The one issue that I'm concerned about is that even with choosing a dual boot option, that I might possibly cancel out the bootloader for 8.1 with the grub or whatever loader that the Linux distro uses. And I was wondering if you could clarify that for me.
Sure. Never say never, right? But the theory is, and I've done this on many, many, many machines. The latest versions of last 4 or 5 years worth of Linux distributions do dual boot very well, and in fact, very easily. When you first boot it up, it says, "Wait a minute, there's an operating system on here," and you get the choice of either replace it entirely or dual boot. And then it just does everything else itself. You have to tell it how much you want to use for each version and blah, 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 blah.
So if you read the text and answer properly, you're fine.
Yeah, you take your time, you read each screen,
of course.
right, right, and think before you click on anything, you should be all right. But certainly, as Larry did, adding a little external drive, which you can get for, what, $100 these days?
I think I saw 4 terabyte on sale for $89.
Yeah, okay.
4 terabytes.
4 terabytes. For $89, that's.
I'm sorry. What's on sale for? What terabyte is on sale well, for?
Well, he's in. Well, he's in Newport News, Virginia, so it would be a.
It was probably one of the big box stores.
It's a big box store.
Oh, okay. One like a Best Buy or something like that.
Some sort of big box store, yes. With something along that line, you can do all kinds of stuff now.
Even if you have a desktop computer, you can get a second internal drive,
right?
Which is usually cheaper, but then you have to know how to install it.
Right. But here's the thing you have to remember about external drives. Depending on how they're connected, they can be a little slower than the internal drive.
Okay.
Right? Because if you've only got USB 2.0, for example, you have a maximum speed that's slower than the internal drive speed of transferring data. Right. So that's something to be aware of. But again, if what you're doing is playing and learning, then that slightly lower speed shouldn't matter much.
Yeah, I'm very in that regard. I'm very much a newbie. I would be playing and learning.
Right. So if it takes an extra second to boot something up, so what?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing that you discussed with the other caller was about the graphical user interface. So I guess there's something that I'm going to need to choose for an actual graphical user interface.
Yes. Well, yes. There are one of the lovely and confusing things about Linux is that you have so many choices. There are a number of different user front ends, the GUIs, the graphical user interfaces. There's GNOME, there's KDE, there's Mate, there's XFCE, there's LXDE, I could go on and on and on. What you want to do is take a look at, Steve's putting up a link right now about which Ubuntu version should I use, and I believe it speaks mostly about the graphical user interfaces of each one. There are a number that mimic Windows, there are a number that mimic the Mac, and there are a number that that are their own thing. And spending a little bit of time looking at the beauty, of course, is that if you don't like one graphical user interface once you've installed it, you can always install a different one and switch to it. Without reinstalling all of Windows, you can just reinstall the graphical user interface. On my last desktop, I started out with GNOME. I tried KDE, which at the time I hated, but apparently is now pretty amazing. I tried LFCE. I stuck with LXDE, and I stuck with I use XFCE now, Xubuntu. But there's Budgie. There's 100 of them, and they're all slightly different and slightly interesting in their own way. And there's another thing you can do, of course, which is if you have, if you want to, and you know, you might have to go into your BIOS and change a couple of settings to allow booting from an external medium. Well, you're going to have to do that anyway. But you can also install. You can also download and put onto flash drives various versions of Linux. Now, they're going to be even slower because on the flash drive, they're compressed. So every time you do something, it has to decompress. You know, it has to uncompress everything, unzip it.
Well, in fact, what I have for bootloading media are two DVD-R discs.
Yeah, it'll be the same thing. It's still going to be, compressed.
And the DVD would be even slower than USB,
right?
Partly because it's read only, and partly because the drives are optical drives are much slower than electronic drives.
But there are lots of choices to play with. And again, as I said, particularly since you're putting it on an external drive, you're not going to do anything to damage your internal drive. What you can see is how to change the graphical user interface that you're using with Linux. So, like I said, I started with GNOME. I downloaded KDE and just went into the switcher and said, use KDE now. And then later on, I downloaded another one and went into the switcher and said, use this one now. And it works. It's literally that simple. All my data stayed there. Everything else stayed there. I didn't reinstall Linux. I just changed the front end.
So it sounds like when you come to the end of loading the distro, that you get the option for the graphical user interface that you want to use when you've completed that sequence?
Well, whichever one you install, it boots up with that one. But there is a switcher program. Forget exactly what it's called because I haven't used it in a couple of years. But there's a switcher program that you install the new graphical user interface, and that's as easy as on Linux, it's sudo apt install KDE, right? And then you go into the switcher, and you say, well, I'm currently using GNOME. I have two choices now, GNOME and KDE, and I select KDE, and then I restart Linux, and bang, I'm in KDE.
I think it might be a good idea for me to click on the link that you're posting.
Yeah, he's
posting. Where can I find it?
At soundbytes.org. That's bytes with a Y.
Okay, yeah, I'm on the website.
There you go.
For it
should be the top thing. The second thing. We got to go.
The second thing?
Yeah, we got to go, Will. I'm sorry. Got to take a break. Back
fine.
In just a couple of minutes with
much.
Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 32 minutes after the hour. Soundbytes, member support of Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
I forgot Dave wasn't here.
And at 38 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites. And Will, I know you're still listening out there in Newport News. Your job, of course, is to spread the word in Newport News to listen to soundbites.
And I also wanted to mention to them, before you do anything with installing a new OS, make sure you have a full backup, just in case you miss a question.
Right. Always, always, always back up before you do anything interesting to your machine. So we're on Linux now, so let's talk about this. On Monday, Microsoft added a big new feature to the Windows subsystem for Linux, which you probably didn't know existed, but you have. The current Windows subsystem for Linux uses a Microsoft-authored kernel component that provided the same kernel API as the Linux kernel, but was written from scratch by Microsoft. Essentially, it translated from Linux APIs to Windows NT kernel APIs. That's right, you're still running NT. That worked pretty well, but the current subsystem had a few shortcomings. To put it politely, there was no ability to use Linux drivers, and particularly file system drivers. Its file system performance, layered on top of Windows' own NTFS, was often 20 times slower than a real Linux kernel. 20 times slower.
Ouch.
Than a real Linux kernel. And most of that came from NTFS, so take that as you will. It was also a relatively old version of the kernel. It offered approximately the set of APIs that Linux 4.4 did, and that was released in 2016. Some APIs aren't implemented at all, and others are only implemented partially to meet the needs of specific applications. All of that is changing with Windows Subsystem for Linux 2, or WSL2. Instead of emulating the Linux kernel APIs on the NT kernel, WSL2 is going to run a full Linux kernel in a lightweight virtual machine. This kernel will be trimmed down and tailored to its particular use case with stripped-down hardware support, since it will defer to the host Windows OS for that and faster booting. The Linux kernel is GPL'd open source. The GPL license requires that any modifications made to the code must be published and made available under the GPL license. Microsoft will comply with this, publishing the patches and modifications it makes to the kernel. WSL2 will also use a similar split as the current WSL does. The kernel component will be shipped with Windows, while personalities, as provided by the various Linux distributions, can be installed from the Microsoft Store. By using the Linux kernel itself, Microsoft gets all of Linux's features for free. This is why WSL2 will support Docker containers, all the underlying infrastructure, such as C groups that are already in the Linux kernel, and Microsoft won't need to implement those features itself. The embedded kernel will be serviced and updated by Windows Update. This also provides a big bump in performance. File system-heavy operations, such as extracting a tarball, can be up to 20 times faster. Other activities, such as cloning source codes, Repositories with Git will be perhaps five times faster. WSL has already been warmly embraced by developers as it gives a solid Linux-like development environment. WSL 2 will take that to a new level and all but eliminate the compatibility issues that WSL 1 has. The first preview of WSL 2 is due to ship in June. Of course, if you want Linux, why not eliminate the middleman and just get Linux? Linux, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One thing this does do is eliminate lessen the risk of accidentally destroying your hard drive when you're repartitioning for Linux.
Right.
Because you're running it in a VM.
Right. And it it should be pretty fast, and it should be pretty useful, and if I had a Windows machine, I would look forward to playing with it and giving it a try. And we'll see, we'll see. I have to say, those of you who are on the Ask Nick app, actually saw my post on the year of Linux on the desktop. This is it.
This time?
This is the year of Linux on the desktop. Because not only are you getting Linux in Windows, but also the new, and I'm very excited about this, the next, from now on, they say any new system, Chromebook, will run Linux natively as well. So you can just open up a terminal and be in Linux and run Linux apps. So I'm very excited. If I can get a hot Linux laptop for a few $100s, why would I say no to that?
There's a Reddit thread on when was the first year of Linux on the desktop. 1998.
Yeah, I was about to say at least 20 years ago. And I've been running it for about 20 years. So for me, it was the year of Linux on the desktop. But it'll be very interesting to see where this all goes from now on. The more people who run Linux, and the reason Microsoft is doing it, of course, is because it's a developer thing. Nobody develops for just one most people. All the good people? Anyway, most people.
Don't discount Apple.
Right. Well, but they, right. No, they don't.
They have a Windows program. They have two Windows programs.
Right.
iTunes and Music.
Right. No, but yeah, yes. Yeah, right. No, but I'm saying if you're a developer, you're not going to develop for one platform. Not if you're smart. Because why would you not write for everybody? And one of the problems is that people who write for Linux, actually who develop for Linux, now I'm going to contradict myself, find it sometimes difficult to translate to Windows. Mm-hmm. Now, if you write a Linux program, and there are an amazing number of Linux programs that are incredibly good and don't run under Windows, you will now be able to run them. Just automatically. So what Microsoft is really doing is dramatically increasing the number of programs that are available to them.
Right, and the vast majority of Linux programs are free.
Right.
Are there any pay limit?
Yes. You can pay. Well, you can pay for support.
Yeah.
And there are some paid programs that were translated from the Mac or Windows and therefore actually they charge you for, but mostly you're charged for support, and that sort of thing is has been going on forever.
Yes, sir.
In the Linux world, you can for example, Fedora is a free operating system, but if you want, you can pay for Red Hat, which is exactly the same program, but you get support. So if you're an individual, you might want to run Fedora. If you're a business, you would want to run Red Hat and get the support.
Yep.
But other than that, they're essentially the same thing. And the same thing is true in the Ubuntu world. You can run Ubuntu all day long for free. I've been doing it for 20 years. But you can also pay Canonical for support. So if you're a business, you might want to, or an individual, you might want to pay for that support, and that makes it, nicer, because most companies would prefer to get some sort of support directly from the vendor, and they are certainly willing to pay for that.
Yep.
So there's a you can do that with any of these things. So if Will wanted to, Will, living in Newport News, Virginia, of course, phenomenally wealthy. Once he's installed Ubuntu, he can. I've actually never been to Newport News. I don't. It just sounds.
Well, there's a big shipyard there, so that's where all the stevedores and shipyard workers.
So he's probably not as fabulously wealthy as you might think. But if Will wanted to, he could pay Canonical for support for Ubuntu as an individual. Although generally they prefer to sell larger, more expensive multi-user contracts.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Ontario, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Hey, what's going on? This is Steven down in the 315 Ontario here.
Sure.
The backwoods of Rochester. So I just wanted to say I have a lot of trouble and issues. I can understand why people, they have issue dealing with and installing Linux. And, it goes through what, like a pen drive and a USB thumbstick, and it can be very complicated, correct?
Right? Well, it can be. Here's the deal. You can install it from a CD. You can install it from a thumb drive. You can install it from another
thing. Okay. So what I wanted to do is tell your listeners my advice is I went to the Barnes & Noble store up here in Webster, and I just bought a copy of the Ubuntu magazine, and it comes with a disk with Linux or Ubuntu right in it.
Right,
you know,
right.
You could this for $10 if anybody has any issues. If they, I don't think I could do it, you could just literally put the CD drive in your thing, and it will just install.
Yep, that's exactly right.
From point A to point B.
Yep.
You know.
And you should know that it is perfectly legal for you to make copies of that CD and give them to every human being on the planet.
Because it is a free distribution thing, right?
Yep. It's exactly right.
There are also computers that come pre-installed with Linux from most of the manufacturers, including Dell, that you buy it and it has Linux already on it. So you don't even have to worry about replacing the Windows that's
and
there.
Set up exactly for that hardware.
Yep.
So yeah, excellent.
I'm just saying to like the people that are, it's intimidating because it could be a very intimidating process. You have to go through a whole bunch of steps. Buy the book, buy the magazine, and you just could get the CD for free. It comes with the magazine, and we'll tell you everything about it. And there you go. I mean, hey,
yep.
Dandy. You know,
there's also the Linux users group that meets. I think it's. RPCN, is that the correct acronym? No, that's the Rochester Professional Consultants Network. That's not what I want.
Well, there's been Lugor, but they haven't updated their website.
No,
in a while.
Rochester Computer Society.
Rochester Computer Society. RCSI.
I.org. RCSI has a special interest group that's for Linux. They're meeting. They meet the third Saturday of every month from noon to 4 p.m. Here up in Rochester at Interlock on 1115 East Main Street.
Is that today? That's next week.
If you go to rcsi.org, the Rochester Computer Society Incorporated, rcsi.org, and click on the SIG link at the top of the page, Special Interest Group, you'll see that there, and they will be available. Bring your laptop, and I'm sure that they'll be able to help you install any version of Linux you want.
And now that I'm using it, there's people won't understand. There's so many different varieties of Linux. They call them colors or whatever, I guess. For the Windows users, I encourage them to use Linux Mint because it's a basic changeover from Windows. It's basically taking Windows and putting it into Linux for a graphic user interface that everybody can enjoy. You know what I mean?
Yep. And in fact, that's at linuxmint.com, LINUXMINT, linuxmint.com, and it very much looks like Windows and is set up. It's designed to mimic Windows so that you have the least amount of cognitive dissonance as you begin to use it. It's an excellent version.
I'm just telling you guys, thanks for letting me chime in once again. Steve from Ontario, go out to the store, Barnes & Noble. You could buy a copy of the magazine. It comes pre-included with the CD, you know. So
perfect.
That's what I got to say.
Perfect. Thanks,
right,
Steve.
Have a good day, fellas.
You too. Thanks. That's actually a very good idea. I used to get the Linux magazine. There used to be a half a dozen of them. I suspect there's probably only one now. The Ubuntu magazine, and you can install it from any version you like, and it should give you a complete and usable version of Linux. So enjoy that. While you're thinking about that, we'll go back to the phones and talk to Mike from Rochester, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up? Or not. We may not talk to Mike. Sorry, Mike. Not quite sure what happened there, but stuff happens. Please call back. We'll see if our Mike, the incredible Mike Oden, is it still Mike?
As our phone systems weren't quite intended for radio calls.
You can see that again.
Yeah. All right, Mike, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Hi, there we are. Thanks, yeah. Mike. Thanks for your patience.
Hey, listen, speaking about memory today, I was just curious. On the Chromebooks that you see advertised, it'll say, I think most of them are, 4 gig or whatever.
Yeah.
But then they'll say with a flash drive, you can get, a lot of more memory. My question is, does the unit itself know when it runs out of internal memory to automatically step to the flash drive, or do you have to tell it like you would, say, on a camcorder or something like that?
The old ones you had to tell. The new ones do it automatically.
And a lot of the ads are conflating working memory with storage memory.
Right.
And so it's got 4 gigs of working memory and a 64 gig flash card for storage memory. The annoying part is that they both use gigabytes as their unit, but they're two completely different things.
Right.
Well, right. But, I mean, say if you're, let me see if I understand you then. Say if you're coming to the end of a sentence and then it runs out of internal memory, does it give you in some units it'll give you a little bar that tells you how much you've got left. Do the Chromebooks tell you that, is that just an advertising ploy, or is that something that you can actually use for the unit as more memory
than
the unit has?
It works exactly like swap space.
Yeah, when it runs out of memory, it swaps the disk.
Just like Windows does.
Right, but do you have to tell it that, or does it do
No, it's automatic. It's automatic on both machines, on all three machines, on the Mac as well.
Mm-hmm.
The use of swap space is automatic. You do not have to do anything to make it happen.
Now, okay, so the advertising is correct in this case. It's not some kind of a subtle between the lines type of an approach.
Yeah,
right.
And there would be two different units on the ads. One is your memory, and one is your storage.
Right. Now, the other thing to be aware of is the very huge difference between Chromebooks and Windows and Macs is that the operating system on a Chromebook uses a whole lot less memory than Windows or the Mac OS.
Yes.
Now, for example, I'm on a 2 gig Chromebook right now, and I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 tabs open, all of which are doing some fairly large things.
Mm.
And I'm only using 77% of my 2 gigs.
Yeah, it's like Chrome uses, less than a quarter of what Windows would use.
Right. So believe me, I've never run out of storage of memory on my 2 gig machine, no matter what I do. And I've written whole books on this Chromebook.
That's good to know. That's great. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, that's the direction I needed. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
There you go. Sure. Thanks. It becomes an entirely different mindset.
Yeah.
When you're looking at a Chromebook, it is not at all the same set of calculations you have to make for a Windows or a Mac machine.
We've been telling people for years, never buy Windows with 2 gigs of RAM. Even 4 gigs of RAM of memory isn't enough on Windows.
Right.
4 gigs is fine for Chrome.
4 gigs is more than fine. I said, this is 2 gig. I've never run out of space.
Yep.
It's pretty good. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rob from Rochester, New York. Hi, Rob. What's up?
How you doing, Nick?
Peachy, how are you?
I've been better. I've been worse, as they say.
Yeah?
I've got some clown hackers in the building, and they've got Han High, a router above me. I called like last week or the week before.
Yeah, you did.
And I haven't been able to straighten out the tablet, and it's primarily because of them. But this is the latest. They've wiped out five of my phones because of what their key loggers, they're capable of changing my password. So no matter what the heck I do, in addition to interrupting Spectrum, here's the deal that I'm presently trying to overcome. I try to use my settings. I don't have any passwords on my phone because there's no point. If I put a password on there, they're going to manipulate it, and then I can't get back on my own phone. I've got another dead phone right next to me as a result of that. I talked to you about Knock Knock. To try to offset them. So when I hit settings, this is what happens. First thing that happens, it says, unfortunately, the process, okay, com.android.settings,
yes.
Won't open. And then you close, you open again, it says. Then I do that, try to open it again, and I get com.android.settings, keep stopping. And that's what it does. It just... that's the latest cute little trick
yep.
they've come up
yep.
with.
Now, look, I think we've said this before. What you need to do is talk to the police.
Well, yeah, they just say you got to talk to security, and security, you know, is useless. And not knocking the guys. It's just not their ball game.
Not security in the building, your real police.
Yeah.
The actual police department.
I've had them here 12 times.
Cyber crime division.
There is a cyber crime division here in Rochester, and those are the people you need to talk to.
Okay, I'll do that next. Is there a phone number listing, or do you know it?
I don't know it off the top of my head. Steve is looking it up. Hold on.
Also, New York State Troopers have a cyber crime division, too. So if the local police...
My uncle was state police, but that's another story. Okay, cyber crime... And state as well as RPD?
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
This is out of control because I try to buy stuff for my sister. You know, I'm taking care of her.
Right.
And these people are, you know, full-time criminals, so they got nothing to do.
Right. You need to talk to the police. They can deal with this. Unless you have a massive amount of knowledge, you're not going to be able to handle it on your own.
Yeah.
Get the police involved. If they're committing a crime... Then you need to report that crime.
And if they're doing, since they're doing it over Wi-Fi, that constitutes as interstate.
Yeah,
possibly. Yes. So the FBI
I believe it might. But I would talk to the cyber crime units in both the New York State Police and the Rochester Police Department, and get them involved because that's what they're there for. Use the resource. You're a taxpayer. Use the resource. We gotta go. I'm sorry, Rob.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks. Call the police. We're going to take a slightly longer break since we've now wasted an hour of your life with this stuff. But don't go away. Take a quick bio break and come on back because we're going to be back as well. We're going to be back with Steve Ray, with Michael Oden, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You, for no discernible reason, are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue with your support to be member supported. That's Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that must be Soundbites. Right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. And while you do that, I will read the latest news story. Most businesses know that a war with the people who buy and use their products is a war they can't win. Microsoft has belatedly recognized this with regards to its Windows update policies. And if you've been paying attention to shifts in the corporate culture in Redmond, the company's surrender to its customers shouldn't be a surprise. The long simmering war has to do with the way the Windows 10 updates itself on PCs. Specifically, the twice a year significant updates called feature updates that add new capabilities to Windows. For years, you've had, for all practical purposes, no choice about whether to update. Your PC installed all updates automatically, whether you liked it or not, whenever they wanted to. You had no say in the matter. Windows users have not been pleased about this, and with good reason. Far too often, features updates have been released before they were ready for prime time, sometimes even causing damage to PCs and files. For example, the last one, just to pick the last one and not bother with the one before and the one before and the one before and the one before, the Windows 10 October 2018 update deleted files without letting users know, and those files were lost forever. Oh, let's talk about at least the one before that, when there was the Windows 10 April 2018, Windows 10 April 2018 update fiasco, when people complained that it crashed their computers and displayed the notorious blue screen of death. I could go on, but this is only a two-hour show. Not many people did what was necessary to stop those automatic updates from being installed, because it's not particularly easy and the results aren't ideal. Instead, people complained long and loudly. Microsoft ignored them. They complained some more and were still ignored, but now with the upcoming Windows 10 May 2019 update, Microsoft has cried uncle. Late in the update's testing phase, the company announced that it is going to give people control over whether or not to install feature updates. With the coming release, Windows won't automatically install a feature update when it becomes available. Instead, Windows will notify you that it's available by showing a download and install now message and a link in the Windows update settings area, pane, whatever they call that. If you don't want to install it, you can ignore the message. If you want to install it, click the link and follow the instructions. And if you want to wait a while, a few days, a few weeks, a few months, until you can make sure that the update isn't problematic, you can go ahead and do that. The control, finally, is in your hands. Well, not completely. There is a caveat. When the version of Windows 10 you're running reaches end of service and Microsoft no longer supports it or issues security updates for it, you'll have to install the latest feature update. Usually that's 18 months after your current Windows version's release. Wait, you're saying end of service is only 18 months for Windows? Yes. Yes, it is. Note that you'll still have to install the small patches Microsoft issues every month. That's because they are often security updates and everyone should have them. However, Microsoft has agreed to give you some control of when they're installed. You'll be able to delay them for up to 35 days. So are you ready to take control of your PC from Microsoft?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Say it with me. Yes. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
There's a recent Security Now episode. Steve Gibson was complaining about all the crap that Windows 10 installs. Straight from Microsoft.
Oh, for Pete's sake, stop using Windows 10.
He just grudgingly went to 7 because his XP machine died. But he has 10 because he keeps his foot in it. Straight from Microsoft, Windows 10 ISO downloaded, not even the OEM crap that comes on machines. His point was that he found the Windows 10 long-term service channel available to MSDN subscribers.
Yes.
It comes without all that crap.
Right.
And it's 10 years of guaranteed support.
If you pay for it. We've been saying that forever.
$800 a year for an MSDN channel.
Yes.
So for $800, you can not have the crap.
Right. And get support until you're ready to, for 10 years.
Yep.
But you don't get that for free.
Yep.
But okay, that's fine. I'm sure I'm going to get calls from people who, I use Windows 7. I still got updates. My machine ran, didn't get support. No, you're not. No, you're not. It's that simple. That, by the way, was another of my posts on the SNCC app, SNCC.com. Sign up for the phone app. You get it for Android or iPhone. I did a fairly long
Rant?
Not really. Post. Let's call it a rant on how Windows 7 really has reached end of life, and no, you're not getting updates. Not all of them. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Hey, and I'm ready to not have my computer suddenly rebooting because I turned my back for a couple of minutes because Windows had an update.
Yeah.
Hey, we're that family that raised our kids coming to your personal appearances, your live shows. Are you are you doing a party for your anniversary this year?
Well, Rob Linton keeps threatening it, but he hasn't done anything about it yet, and it's not till September. So okay. Our hope is that something will happen if Rob is listening, and that's never.
I can guarantee you that he is because he's listening. To the levels.
Oh, you're right. He's listening to the levels. Rob, you've heard it. We have one unsolicited testimonial for something for our 30th anniversary. That's coming up in September. We've been on the years on the air as of right now for 29 years, 8 months and 8 days. So we've got less than 4 months to our 30th anniversary party.
Okay,
it should be
well,
fun.
If you do anything, we'll try to be there.
Excellent. I would love to see you there. And let's be honest, we'll be announcing it constantly when it happens, if it happens.
Okay. Anyway, my actual problem is we're having trouble seeing a network-attached drive and other computers on our router network.
Uh-huh.
This is mainly with Windows 10 machines. Our tablets and phones seem to be able to see other drives. The web page, it's a Linksys router, brand new one, and it on Windows 10, it on its own web page, it says the drive's attached, everything's functioning. Just look on your network access, and you'll see the drive. Except we don't on any Windows 10 machines.
Right, and the reason for that is. Oh, how shall I put this? Microsoft. What they've done is it used to be that when you booted up Windows, it automatically joined a work group called, cleverly, work group, and mm-hmm. would then see any device on the network called that was in the work group. They've now changed that name, and I don't quite remember what it is.
Home.
There was a home group or something for a while.
Yeah.
Not sure.
So if you change the Windows 10 group that it belongs to work group.
Or whatever the NAS is putting out.
Right, whatever name the NAS is putting out, your network attached storage is putting out. Then the Windows 10 system should see it. Clearly the problem is in the Windows 10 systems because your tablets and phones are seeing them fine.
Yeah. The other possibility is that Windows may be set for public networking, which then automatically hides that computer, which is what you want to have on your Wi-Fi in a coffee shop because you don't want other people being able to see you. So you need to make sure you're set to a private network so that your machine will see other stuff on the network.
Right, and the thing is, my desktop is wired into the thing. The other ones are wireless, my wife's and son's laptops.
Yeah,
right.
So you can have your wired network. Yeah, you can have your wired network be private and your wireless network public. So when you do take a laptop out, it stays public. But you want to, I'm posting a link now, you want to make sure that your network setting is set to private so that it can find things on the network.
It is confusing.
And you also need to turn on network discovery.
Right. And it is confusing because it really means the opposite of what you think it does. When you say the network is public, what that means is anybody can see it. And so you want to lock it up. When you say the network is private, that means it's not available to the general public so you can open up everything. So it's actually backwards from what you think it is. I want to make this machine public. No, you want to keep it from going public.
Yeah, there's a setting on the router. I don't have it.
No, this
now,
is on no. This is
something
in,
like private. It's like internet networking versus internal.
No, so. You want to do this because the NAS is working. You know it's working because all the laptops and phones, the tablets and phones can see it.
Exactly.
That's not, so the problem is not your router. The problem is the Windows 10 machines. Now, Steve is going to be putting up a couple of links, one for network discovery and one for where to find the network
public
name and public versus private there. And so wait until he gets those put up in the next couple of minutes and go look at those and make those changes on Windows 10, one machine at a time. Pick one machine, write down the settings that are now on it so you can go back to them if you need to. Remember to always do that, but basically, follow along with what he's got there, and it should help you. It should help you get your systems to see what's on the NAS.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Have fun. Yeah, it's okay. It's an issue that we've seen for a while. They've changed it from work group to home group. Home group, I think.
Yeah.
And consequently, all the hundreds and thousands and millions of devices that were put out there for decades with work group as their group name now don't work anymore because they changed the default to home group instead of work group. This, just change it back to work group and you should be fine.
One of the things that I guess is nice is that the defaults now for Windows 10 are don't turn on network sharing, don't turn on network discovery, make the network public so that no one can see you, which is usually what
announce that the network is public so no one can see it.
Right, which is good for the default users, but when you do want to share files with someone else on your own network, it makes it a little harder to do that. The early version of Windows, everything was shared by default. Remember the early days of Roadrunner where the C drive was shared on the WAN port?
Yes.
So we open up Network Neighborhood and see everybody's C drive.
Yeah. I do remember that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Anthony from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Anthony. What's up? Anthony, you there?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. My cousin called before, and I'm trying to help him with this problem. His phone gets two messages, and he looked it up, and there's 10 different categories. I figure you would know the best to turn around and straighten out com.android.settings, keep stopping. What would that be? Because you had to go to break.
Is this Rob who's got the hackers upstairs?
No, this is his cousin.
No, but you're talking about Rob, who has the hackers upstairs.
Exactly.
His phone has been hacked, and he needs to talk to the police about it.
It ain't on the phone right now. It's just on the internet. So having said that, there's a remedy to straighten this out, Nick. What do you think is the best way to try to do it?
Erase the phone completely, replace the storage drive, and load a new operating system because you can't trust that phone anymore because it's been hacked.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. It isn't in phone mode yet. It's only being used on the internet. So
it's still a phone on... It doesn't matter whether it's going wireless or on the internet. It's still a hacked phone.
A network device, a computer.
It's a network device that's been hacked. And a phone these days is just a computer.
But when you go on the internet and explain these things to to give you all these different remedies, just this, there has to be a relatively quick way that you guys know to keep them from stopping settings. Right.
No, there is not. And that's the problem. When you have something like the knock-knock virus...
Well, that's another story. I just mean com.android.settings. I understand. The Android, my cousin was responsible for that.
Com.android.settings.
Yeah, always stopping the, when you hit...
Is being stopped because of the knock-knock stuff that those guys did.
No, this is another phone.
It doesn't matter. It truly does... It doesn't matter. It's been hacked. That's how that stops. It is a basic internal service, and it has been hacked.
With his router?
Not through the router, directly into the phone. Through the router, sure. Yeah. Because the packets come through the router. But don't think about the router. This all is happening inside the phone itself.
Yeah, well, I just thought he changed an IP address and we could turn around and manipulate it.
Nope.
Reverse engineer it.
No, because it's already inside the phone.
You can try erasing the phone and reinstalling a clean OS from a clean network environment.
No, you can't.
But no.
In other words, you have to take it to whoever your vendor is.
It really is.
Everything else works. So
yes, I understand that. But this is the issue. He's been hacked, and
he's
the hack is
settings.
In his phone. It is not in the router. There may be a hack in the router too, but there is definitely a hack in his phone because the router cannot influence settings.com.android. That is happening inside the phone itself.
Right. And you know of no reversal for that.
There is no reversal for that other than what Steve said.
Well, we appreciate your time. We want you to know that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But, take care.
Yep, you too. It's simply the answer is that
something in the phone is preventing it from happening. And
right.
The only way to fix it is to replace the innards of the phone.
Right. Right. You gotta be aware of that. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. Hi, Jerry. What's up?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Quick question. When you subscribe on your email, why do they ask you for your email when they already have it to give you the email to begin with? And once you unsubscribe, I seem to be getting more emails from other vendors that I didn't solicit or ask for. And I just wonder if they sell that email or give it to other vendors to contact.
Yes, many places do. That's why I have a warning on Ask Nick that when you give me your email address, I will not sell it. I will not spam you. I will not use it for anything except the thing you gave it to me for, which is to let you sign into the app you're paying for.
There's sort of two sides to the story. When you yourself subscribe to a service, they send you an email loop to make sure it's you doing it because there's a problem with malicious subscriptions. You know, 1,000 people get subscribed to something maliciously. They didn't want to do it, and so companies added this loop. Then you have legitimate companies that send you an email that you can unsubscribe from. They generally will take you off of their list, but they may have sold your address to other people. Then you have the illegitimate companies and the fake companies and the spam companies that if you try to click unsubscribe on that link, that guarantees you'll be added to hundreds of more lists. So never unsubscribe from junk mail unless it's from a legitimate company.
Just set a filter so that it gets dumped immediately to your trash.
Yeah.
There's also the fact that many legitimate companies get hacked and their email lists are stolen.
Yeah. What are you up to now? 7 billion?
Yeah, 7 point some odd billion accounts have been hacked. So the problem with email is that it is, email was designed in the days when, the internet was hippie land.
And everyone was trusted.
Right. Everybody trusted everybody. It was peace and love and that stuff. So one of the things that you want to do is use an email provider who has good filters in place. Gmail, for example. Google has amazing filters. I have any number of email addresses across any number of systems. And by and large, however you should put that, the least amount of spam comes to me on Gmail.
Right.
Because they're filtering it themselves.
And then your email program you use to read the mail, you can set up other filters. Sometimes some programs call them rules, some call them filters. So that if you get, a department store is sending you junk mail and the unsubscribe doesn't work, you can say if the sender is department store, trash immediately. So you don't even see it in your inbox.
I see. I'm using Roadrunner right now, and do they have an adequate filter?
No.
No, they have almost no filters.
Oh.
So you have to do the filtering yourself in your email program.
I see. So I guess the best solution is just to switch to Gmail with their filter, and it should filter out most of these.
We always recommend that people use an email service that isn't from their internet service provider. That way, if they change internet service providers, they don't have the pain, the additional pain of then having to tell everybody to change your email.
It's almost worse than postal moving.
Yeah, it really
changing
is.
Changing your email address.
It really is. So one thing you definitely want to do is do it now while you are still using both of them. That way you can get the people who matter to you and tell them, please use this address. And eventually the only thing coming to that other address is spam, and you can just ignore it.
I see. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Yeah, absolutely. Have fun.
The email companies have been trying to put in some sort of email security, email authentication that tries to prove it's a legitimate message or not, and none of them have really caught on because the bad guys don't care.
Right,
and it's easy enough to hijack a mail server and say, I don't support the new security. So the mail servers fall back to saying, okay, send me the unsolicited, unencrypted, unprotected mail, and I'll pass it on for you.
Right. That's exactly right. And it's a problem that many places have. And then there are the internet service providers like Greenlight who don't provide email because it's not what they do.
Yep.
And so you want to have a third-party email program. Gmail, like I said, has excellent filters. Yahoo's are not great.
And Yahoo's email page is full of ads. We just had a customer the other day, somehow from a script on her, on the web page, it was able to add a forwarding email address. So every message she got was being forwarded to a bad guy.
Yep. And you want to be very careful of how that looks. You might all, any of you who are using Yahoo right now, might want to look at your forwards and see if there's anybody set in there that you didn't set.
The other thing they did was the reply to address had changed. So
right, so check all of that
stuff. If someone replied to a message from you, it didn't come back to you. It went to the bad guy.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Hi, Gerd, what's up?
Hey, I got to tell you, I'm a member.
That's what we like to hear.
Okay, I got a couple of Chromebooks, and I have a problem with what's showing up on the screen. The screen is like huge, and I have to use the mouse left and right to see what's going on. I don't know what happened. I don't know how it. I have two Chromebooks. I got an HP, and I got an Acer. I use the Acer most of the time. And I don't know what to do.
And it's happening on both of them?
Yes.
Okay, you can use the Control Plus to make the screen bigger and the Control Minus to make the screen smaller. So if you've somehow, alternately, of course, if you go to the three dots in the corner, there's a zoom, which can increase and decrease the size of your screen as well.
Control zero should put everything back to normal.
Right.
Control zero?
Yeah.
Like the number, the number zero?
Yep.
Yeah.
Somebody, your name is.
And so there's also Control Shift Zero, depending on whether the screen is magnified or the text is magnified.
Right.
Now on my Mac, I've got it set up to be Control and then Zoom, and that's something you can accidentally do. That if you have something happens to hold down the Control key in the lower left corner, and then you're trying to scroll a window, you can accidentally zoom in on it.
Right.
Okay, so how? Right now I have to use a pointer left and right just to get the whole thing that's going on.
Yeah, so that sounds like you're zoomed in on the window.
Yeah, also, that's what it sounds like is happening.
Yeah, that could work, but it also could be something.
So
also the key above the 5 is a little square with two corners have arrows in them.
Right.
Hitting that will make the thing full screen, but I don't think that's the problem you're having.
I got more than full screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the control plus and minus zooms in and out, right. So that should be what fixes your problem.
Control plus and minus.
Right. Control plus makes it bigger.
Yeah.
Control minus makes it smaller.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yep. Good luck.
Yep.
And by the way, speaking to the person much earlier who called about how much RAM you need for a system, I've now got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of my... Michael, you got a phone ring in there.
Yeah, put down the phone.
Yeah, there you go.
While he's on the phone.
He's on the phone talking to people. He's trying to get stuff done and don't... Is that Rob? Rob, don't call him while he's on the air. What the heck is wrong with you? I've got, what did I say?
No, that was another caller.
4, 5, 6, 7.
No, that was another caller that was calling into me. I don't want to go on the air, but while I'm here.
No, that's not how this works. Yeah. Michael's got way too much to do. He's producing the show, which means he's on the board and he's answering phones and he's doing six things in a row. Anyway, I've got nine tabs open and I'm still only using 83% of my 2 gigs of memory. So, and one of them is showing all kinds of pictures and another one is as well and a couple of other things. All right. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. With Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 32 minutes after the hour. Sound bites. Take a break and breathe, Michael. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Larry. What's up?
I'm back.
You're back.
I have restarted the machine twice, and when I go back to about, it still says that my GNOME shell is 3.28.2, but when I go to the settings and look at it, it actually says that GNOME application platform version 3.32 is installed, and it actually asks me if I want to remove it, and of course not. Do I ignore what this thing is saying and just assume that 3.32 is there and working and this other thing just doesn't see it?
No, what it sounds like is you've installed it, but it's not active. And it may have installed incorrectly.
Which is interesting because Linux is usually pretty good at that.
Yeah. You've done the update and you've got the once you've got the update installed, it should just be. It says it's installed. Yes.
Yes. When I look at all of the install and then when I check for updates, it says there are no new updates. I wasn't even aware of this until yesterday when it came up and it says you have a new update. And it says that the GNOME system was the only thing to be updated. I checked update. It ran for a while and came back and said, you are successfully installed.
Well, I tell you what, that I've honestly not seen that.
Would you have to switch to it like you were switching desktop environments?
No, if it's GNOME to GNOME, you shouldn't have to do anything to it.
You've stumped him. Congratulations.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. I'm fascinated by this because I've not seen it before. Once you've got the thing installed, it should just work. When you installed it, there was no error message. There was none of that.
There was nothing. It ran for a while, more than 5 minutes, and I walked away and came back still running while I was sitting there. Everything came up. It explained it. It said, congratulations, you're installed. As a matter of fact, when I select it now, it just gives me an explanation of what it is, and then there's a big red button that says remove, and of course I don't want to do that.
Right, right, right.
Maybe one of his other things is not compatible with the new...
Well, that's certainly...
But then how to find out what that is the trick.
Yeah, so you've... I do not know. I've not seen this. How interesting. If anybody out there has some idea... I'm stumped. I am actually stumped. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to keep hacking around on the network, on the net, and see if I can come up with something, too. I don't know what to do. I'm certainly new at all this, so I don't really have a clue. The system seems to be working fine, as near as I can tell, but it says it's installed, but the about says you're not installed, or you're running the older
right,
version,
right.
If you will.
Right. It is supposed to just work. And you did a restart.
Yeah, I did. First, I did a simple restart, and then I simply shut the machine down. I've done one restart and two shutdowns, and it doesn't see it at all. The same information keeps coming up. But it comes up in the installed software, and on the add-ons, I have something called Core, and then an iBus table, whatever that is, and then a GNOME application platform,
and those are all installed.
Buttons beside them. So yeah. I'm assuming that means it's installed. Remove it if you want to.
You could check to see if the new features are available.
I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I found a list of some of the new features. There's new icons. There's an emoji keyboard.
Yeah, I would have to go to that. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
Well, and you're on 1804?
I'm sorry?
You're on Ubuntu 1804, right?
Yes. 1804.2 LTS.
Right, 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 right.
I like this website I found. It's OMG Ubuntu.
Yeah. I like that one. Wow. I honestly don't know. We'll look into it, but I don't have an answer right now. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I'll check your Ask Nick. I'll look on the website and I'll see what I can find. It doesn't seem to have stopped the system from operating. I just thought I would ask because so far everything I've tried to upload either from the graphic or the GUI or following very carefully the instructions in the terminal, everything has worked.
Right, right, and it's supposed to do that. It's supposed to just work.
Yeah. So this one came up in the GUI, and it just said you have an update available. Mm-hmm. So I did it.
Okay, makes sense. I don't know what to tell you, but it should have worked, and I agree with you. I'll look into it.
Okay. Well, maybe there's another listener out there who may know.
That's exactly what we're hoping. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Bye bye. Yeah, that's it isn't often that. Linux doesn't do something right.
Yeah. One of the features is that your avatars are now round. I guess they were square before.
They were squarish.
So that'll let you know if it's working.
Right. So all right. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
We're back to the phones. Our next caller is Smiley. Our friend Smiley from
Nick,
Rochester.
On that earlier call you had there with the guy that got his phone hacked and then his cousin called?
Yeah.
What happened is it's a back door. Somebody put a back door on there.
That's what I'm saying.
There's no way you can get that out of there unless, like you said, erase it. I mean, it's like this guy's got a spare key to his house.
And
the only way to stop him is to change the locks.
And if it's been rooted, then even erasing may not work.
That's right.
So, that would have been an easier way to explain it to him, I think, it's something that somebody put on there. There's nothing they can do about it.
Right.
I mean, and it just has to be erased.
Yep. Perfect. Thanks, Smiley.
Okay. Listen to it on the radio, then.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, he's right. Once your phone has been hacked, There's very little you can do. It's the same thing with ransomware. One, you know, if your machine has been hit by ransomware, that's why we do backups.
Yep. And yeah, so once you've been infected, it's very difficult to be sure that you've cleaned it all out, even after erasing it, because there are some infections that live in the firmware.
Right.
There's infections that live in the hard drive BIOS. So even though you erase the data part of the hard drive, the infection is in the hard drive BIOS and comes back as soon as you reboot again.
Right. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ernesto from Farmington, New York.
Parrington.
My fault. Sorry. Go ahead.
Listen, two questions. My wife updated and shut down Windows 10 last week. When she went to open it up a few days ago, it wiped out everything, and it just said Microsoft Edge, and she lost all the iTunes and everything else. Now, I couldn't figure it out, and so then the next day I saw it wanted to update again. I said, I'll do that, and then everything came back. So I'm not sure what happened, that it wiped out everything, and then with another update, everything came back.
Yeah, it was probably hiding. Well, one of the things Windows does during the update is move all of your stuff to a temporary directory while it loads all the updates, and then it moves it all back when it's done. The 2 or 3 month ago update was forgetting to move it all back.
Yep.
And then deleted the temporary directory, so that deleted everything permanently. It looks like you guys got lucky, and the next update was able to finish and move it all back, and it came back again.
Yeah, this is not an unknown issue with Microsoft updates. That's why one of the earlier news items I read, Microsoft is changing the way they do updates, so that hopefully one can only hope that you will have fewer problems like this in the future.
Oh, okay, so at least everything came back, and it's a miracle.
Yeah, count yourself lucky, because for a lot of people it didn't.
So get a backup drive and back up everything just in case it doesn't come back next time.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's the second question I wanted to ask. I need to get a good backup program to back up the whole drive, and I'll want to buy an external drive. Any good programs that are simple to use that just, you know, that autopilot it and it will back up periodically by itself?
Your name is. We usually mention Cobian backup. A lot of times, I know Seagate and Western Digital both sell drives specifically for backup, and they come with their own backup program. Windows backup is good.
I got an external drive. I just want to get a good program that's easy to use and to back up the whole drive and periodically update that, from the computer. Is there anything that's simple for dummies to do the whole backup and it can update from the
Cobian is very good, and a lot of people love it. It's it's also free, so there's nothing wrong with that. Backup is something that you really want to be able to do easily. There's a number of them. Ease Us, I guess it. I don't know, whichever that is. But Cobian is the one everybody seems to like. It's highly customizable, and it even has encryption if you want it. But unfortunately, it's not really as good for backup for beginning users. The one you might want to look at is Paragon Backup and Recovery.
Okay. Which is $50. See,
that's $50. Bucks. It's not free.
That's fine. The trouble avoiding going to a computer place to fix things is much more expensive. $50 sounds like reasonable.
Yeah.
So that's Paragon.
Paragon, P-A-R-A-G-O-N, Paragon.
Okay, guys.
All right. Yeah, absolutely, our pleasure. And that's at, hold on a second. I'm giving you the address, or I will be in a moment.
Probably Paragon.com.
Paragon-software.com.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay,
We've talked in the past that the Windows backup program is pretty good, but the restore program sucks.
Yeah, right. Right.
So
you got to have a good backup that you can also restore with.
Right.
Yeah. No, I need something for idiots.
Yeah.
Myself.
you'll definitely find that, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Yep, thanks. All right, our next caller is Walter from Greece. Michael's pushing
buttons.
We're getting
a rash of calls at the end of the show again.
Larry
did call back early and often.
Larry did call back early and often. That's exactly right. So that's good, but
it looks like
we're doing our best. While he's doing that, I want to thank all the people who've texted me or written to me or sent me an email about my my new app, my online app. If you go to asknick.com, you'll see it there. It pretty much explains everything you can do with it and gives you some idea of what's in the app. So not really the place to talk about it right now, because we're going to talk to Walter from Greece, New York, or not, that we may not talk to Walter. My poor Michael, he's doing 100 things at once, and he normally only has to do 50, and it's those of you on the YouTube channel can see Michael having a meltdown. Luckily, he's turned off his microphone. So you if you read lips, please accept our humblest apologies. But Michael is working hard to get everybody set up, but it looks like he's had a small issue. So, Walter, please call back. We apologize for not having gotten to you.
Preferably, like, very, 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 yeah.
Yeah, we've only got a couple of minutes left. So if you're going to call back, Walter, call back right now. That's the way that's got to work. But again, thanks to everybody who sent me an email about my new app, and that's very nice. We appreciate that. I appreciate that. I'm keeping it up. I put something new pretty much every day. Saturdays are a little hard. Okay, we do have Walter from Greece on the line. Excellent. Walter, you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, what can we do for you?
I just wanted to say about Larry. If he wants to check, he ought to try to go to Synaptic Package Manager so he can go in and take a look to see if he's got any broken packages. And then he can also make sure that it's also loaded. By doing the search, he can make sure that he has the latest the GUI.
That's a good idea through the Synaptic Package Manager, and what that is in Linux, everything is a package, and you have package managers that manage those packages. So if you wanted to install LibreOffice, that's a package, and you use the package manager to install that, and you can do it from the command line with a program called apt, APT, or you can do it through the GUI using the Synaptic Package Manager. Apt stands for Advanced Package Tool, and of course Synaptic Package Manager stands for Synaptic Package Manager.
Right.
Yeah. And either way should give you a list of all the use it depending on whether you want to do the GUI or the command line. You can get a list of everything that's installed. You can see everything you can install. You can install things. You can remove things. You can do all an amazing amount of stuff. There are hundreds of thousands of packages. Actually, there are over 51,000, not hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of packages available for Debian, for Ubuntu, which is a Debian derivative. And so you've got about 50,000 software programs that you can install. So maybe doing it from the Synaptic Package Manager, we can say, show me all the games or show me all the utilities or, you know, whatever, is a little bit easier for most people. But, yeah, it's a good point. A good point, Walter. Thanks.
Welcome. Yeah, because I've had to turn to that several times myself because sometimes I get a bad download or I notice then that I don't have one of the dependencies on my computer. So good luck with Larry then.
Right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
One of the things about the package managers is that most programs have some form of dependency, and the Package Manager will, in fact, download and install those dependencies along with the program itself. But sometimes, as Walter said, sometimes you get glitches in the matrix and they don't install. So if you're thinking you may have missed something, going to the Synaptic Package Manager, one of the tabs is what you need to install. So
it does sound like it downloaded and partially installed but didn't finish activating.
It's very possible that that's what happened. So, Larry, try that, and we'll see. On the other hand, to 3.28.2 is an awfully good version. I don't know what 3.32 added, but I suspect it was not anything major. A couple of cosmetic things, probably. But yeah, the operating systems are getting more and more fancy. The GUIs are getting more and more fancy every day. And one of the nice things about Linux is that you can try any GUI you like. I'm sticking pretty much to XFCE because it is so fast. I like light and fast for that stuff, and I don't need all the. Although it has a bunch of interesting, cool things, but I prefer the simple and fast. I would rather get to what I'm doing quickly. All right, that music tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I apologize to those to whom we did not get. When you call right at the end of the show, you're likely to not get in. I want to thank everybody who downloaded the Ask Nick app. I very much appreciate that. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Michael Oden, who did an amazing and brilliant job today. I want to thank Dave Enright for not being here, although I believe Michael is cursing his soul right now. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And we'll be back in just another week with a whole lot more of Soundbites. 56 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.